Joshua Kors is a contributor to The Nation magazine. He covers news stories like that. For a couple years, he worked at Northern California's top-rated news station, KCBS in San Francisco, while reporting on politics and education. In 2003, he went back, got a master's degree. He's been writing a lot for papers in Utah, and he had got a lot of attention for an investigation into the Utah National Guard's unique role in the Afghan War. I want to find out more on that in just a second, and then we'll get to the Nation piece coming up in just a second and why he's on. Joshua Kors, nice to have you here. Tell me about that Utah National Guard story first. Sound interesting.
Yeah, that was an interesting piece I did a while ago when I was working for the Spectrum, the main paper in southern Utah. The National Guard there, Utah kind of is a second ground zero, as you could call it, for the language war. So many Mormons there serve missions across country lines, learn different languages.
Yeah.
As we go across national lines to, you know, battle in these different countries, we need speakers, we need translators. And America leans on the Mormon community for that capacity.
That's a very interesting idea. I hadn't thought about that, but of course there's so much international mission work done by the Latter-day Saints. Tell me if this is wrong, that in Utah perhaps they also tend to lean more conservative or lean more Republican, and so the army or other people might feel like they're more trustworthy too? I mean, would that play a part in that?
Well, Utah certainly is a more conservative Republican state, but I don't think the politics there enter into the translation or language center.
Well, I just know they've run into some other problems with translators who they didn't, in the end, feel like they could. A couple of translators have come up for charges or something because they didn't feel like they felt like they were playing both sides to the middle, or that they weren't sure where their allegiances were. I would think that might have been a role, but I guess not. The Nation piece, I stopped reading it because I didn't want to know the end of the story yet. So I really didn't. I kind of was looking forward to our conversation about this. Tell us about how you originally came across the story of John Town.
Sure, yeah. John Town was a specialist who served in the U.S. Army in Ramadi, Iraq. He was struck by a rocket there during service, and due to the explosion, went largely deaf. The military honored his wounds with a Purple Heart, but later when it came time to discharge him, they decided that his deafness was actually caused by a pre-existing personality disorder, and discharging him that way, they were able to prevent him from collecting disability or medical benefits for the rest of his life.
Okay, and now this... And so how did you hear about this story? I mean, how did you really come across it?
I was doing a series of profiles of soldiers returning from the war for a local veterans organization. And when I came across John's story, it simply didn't make sense. I said, what do you mean you got struck by a rocket, so you got diagnosed with a personality disorder? It just didn't seem to make sense, especially as I saw him struggling with both the wounds and being denied disability and medical benefits. I did a touch more reporting and found out that in the last 6 years alone, 22,500 soldiers have been discharged with this personality disorder. Cheating those veterans out of their benefits is saving the military $12.5 billion in disability and medical care.
All right, I have to ask, what's their criteria for personality disorder? Do they have to have... I mean, I don't even get it still on the idea of hearing loss and personality disorder, but let's put that aside for the moment. Do they have to have had a pre-existing condition on the record? I mean, do they have it in their file that they have a personality disorder? Is there something that goes on that they know about? Or do they go back and say, do they kind of create that out of whole cloth? I mean, do they have to have something, some paper trail that leads to a pre-existing personality disorder diagnosis?
That's exactly right. There has to be some evidence that the personality disorder, a condition so severe that a person would be too psychologically ill to serve from the very first day, occurred before they joined the service. In all the cases I looked at in my 8 months investigating this story, I found soldiers who were perfectly healthy by the Army's own medical records on their first two screenings, first when they joined the military and a second time before deploying. In these cases, it's only when they come back from Iraq and are wounded and then seek benefits that the pre-existing condition is discovered.
Okay, and so they discover a pre-existing condition, or there really is some sort of paper trail. That is to say, it was diagnosed by the high school counselor, or that they had had some sort of mental episode, considered cured, went into the Army, lost his hearing, and then when they're trying to find an excuse to not pay the guy, they go back and go, aha, here's this old file. Or are they sort of retroactively inventing the personality disorder where there has been no evidence and no paper trail of that before they went into the Army?
It's a pure invention. I mean,
you're
being a touch too meticulous for what the Army doctors are actually doing.
Well, I just want to make sure I get it right.
It's perfectly understandable. They're using these personality disorder discharges in situations that no two good minds could disagree. No logical brain could see deafness coming from personality disorder. In the case of Richard Dykstra, you'd never find anyone who would say personality disorder caused a bilateral hernia. But indeed, when Richard Dykstra suffered those wounds in Iraq, they said that was the cause. Recently, I was looking at a case of a soldier who damaged the lens of his eyeball while serving. They decided that damage was caused by personality disorder.
Okay, I mean, it's such a bizarre idea that you'll pardon me for playing devil's advocate for one more question. But, I mean, are they saying that their behavior, their personality disorder, led them to do something that was so incredibly unsafe that they got injured? I mean, are they even making that kind of claim, that had they not been so whatever they determined the personality disorder to be, if they hadn't been so that way at the time that they were injured, they wouldn't have been injured, and therefore the Army isn't liable for paying for their injuries?
And nope, they're not making that argument at all. They're simply saying that these injuries were connected to the personality disorder, and
thus
they can discharge them without ever seeing disability or medical benefits. Another small print provision here is that the soldiers with the 513 personality disorder discharge, as it's known in the military code, they have to give back their signing bonus for the years they were too wounded to serve, so that on the day of their discharge, thousands of wounded Iraq vets are finding out they actually owe the Army several thousand dollars.
Okay, to add insult to injury, literally, I mean, we're not even using that as a figure of speech here. It's adding insult to injury. They have to give back their signing bonus for being hurt and being too injured to continue to serve.
That's right, that's right. You know, the fine point questions that you ask were really the kind of pressing I did when speaking with Colonel Stephen Knorr, Chief of Behavioral Health.
You need to hang on to that thought, and we'll come back to it. And in fact, what I want to do here, Joshua Kors, is I want to give the number out, and we'll shoot you all the numbers here in just a second to see whether or not there aren't people that are listening to us right now that have had some experience with this that want to get in on the conversation. We're talking about the Nation piece written by Joshua called How Specialist Town Lost His Benefits. And we'll talk about what happened when Joshua Kors tried to take it up the chain of command. Tried to run it up the flagpole, as it were, and see who saluted it. And we'll find out what happens next and whether we can ever get any of these guys their benefits back. On Coast to Coast Live, this is Ian Punnett. One of the coolest mashups of all time, Aretha Franklin and Metallica. Gave you that number that is closest to you so that you can join us in this conversation. Do you know somebody like the story of John Town that Joshua Kors is telling us, somebody who had their benefits cut off for a ridiculous reason? Well, ridiculous, you know, to them. They knew the truth. Not ridiculous to the government, who's, I guess, trying to save money at the expense of those people who had gone over and done what it is that they'd been asked to do. Put their lives on the line. Be injured. Just in the case of John Town. Got a Purple Heart. But then when he was assessed as being somebody that the government was going to have to be paying for the rest of his life, suddenly they invented a discharge on the basis of personality disorder, something that had never been previously known in his case. But they just said that's why he got injured. His deafness after being hit by the mortar shell was as a result of a personality disorder. What happened when Joshua Kors tried to get more from a commanding officer? We'll tell you about that next and get your calls too on Coast to Coast Live. This is Ian Punnett. Back on Coast to Coast Live with Joshua Kors. By the way, coming up, we are going to play just toward the end of this half hour the phone call from last night from the deathbed confession hotline we set up when I was doing open lines in for George last night. And it's the phone call from Bob. If you didn't hear it, it came in toward the tail end of the show. And it was his version, what he saw, what he knew from his experience of the E. Howard Hunt last testimony tape. It was very cool. And we'll get to that coming up. Do you know what we're talking about, Joshua? I'm talking about the E. Howard Hunt tape?
I don't.
Because Rolling Stone did a piece on it when we ran with it originally last month. You remember E. Howard Hunt, right? Former Watergate conspirator?
Yes.
Before he died, he sent a tape to his oldest son, which was not quite a confession because he didn't sound at all like he was unburdening himself of any guilt about it. But he passed along his personal witness to the assassination of JFK.
Hmm.
Yeah. It's way interesting. And Coast to Coast has been running with this story, and other people picked, NPR picked it up after we aired the tape, and George Norrie ran with the tape, and then I played it again last night. And it's a 4.5-minute tape of E. Howard Hunt explaining how JFK was assassinated. And no mainstream press coverage on this at all. None. Mostly, some people say, because E. Howard Hunt lays the blame for it at the feet of LBJ and says that Lyndon Johnson knew all about it. But that's been a popular conspiracy theory for a very long time. It's just weird to hear the voice of E. Howard Hunt explaining how JFK was assassinated. And he completely cops to the idea that he was part of the conspiracy.
Hmm.
Yeah. It's amazing. If you want to hear it, I'll shoot you a copy of it. I'll put you on hold during the break if you want, and give me your email, and I'll send it to you. Anyway, we're talking about this particular story, which Joshua is working on how specialist John Towne lost his benefits, hit by a mortar shell, went deaf, and then was told he had a personality disorder. So you went sniffing around trying to find any kind of commanding officer that would explain this? What happened?
That's right. You know, you were pressing for explanations of this. With something so absurd, you know, 22,500 soldiers deemed perfectly healthy, and then later, when seeking benefits for the wounds they've suffered, suddenly their personality disorder is discovered. Well, Colonel Stephen Knorr, Chief of Behavioral Health at Fort Carson's Evans Army Hospital, has been a fountain of explanations. And there were two he provided to me I thought were very interesting. First, he said, on the matter of how these soldiers could seem perfectly healthy all their lives and then later be diagnosed with this pre-existing condition, he said personality disorder could lay dormant and simply be triggered later by the stressful events in Iraq, something that any psychologist or psychiatrist in your audience is surely laughing at right now. I spoke with an author who wrote the book Courage After Fire. He had been treating wounded veterans for 20 years, said that's just simply not how personality disorder works. But on the matter of it being pre-existing, he had a doozy of an explanation there as well. He said that they didn't have to interview anybody. Naturally, if they had spoken with family, fellow soldiers, they would have seen that these soldiers were perfectly healthy before their injuries. In Specialist Towne's case, he had served for 7 years and won a dozen medals before this rocket attack that knocked him unconscious. Colonel Norris said that all of those people really wouldn't be of interest to the staff because they don't have the keen psychological insight that he and his doctors have to recognize personality disorder. So talking to them would pretty much be a waste of time.
How about that? That puts him in the category of omniscient.
Well, you know,
he's in the wrong job. If he's omniscient, he should be in intelligence. You know, he really shouldn't be doing what he's doing. He ought to be working that omniscience on finding where Bin Laden is, you know?
There are a lot of people that have followed that mold. I think of Surgeon General Gail Pollack, who, when her hand was forced about these 22,500 cases, took some action and did what they called a five-month thoughtful and thorough review. But I did a touch more reporting on that thoughtful and thorough review and found out in their 5 months doing this review, they didn't interview a single soldier. What they did do is go back to the doctor's offices where these fake diagnoses were made and said, hey, did you guys get it right the first time? And the doctor said, yep, we did. And the Surgeon General considered that case closed.
I believe that's what they call a second opinion, isn't that?
Yes, it is. You know, to have people be their own oversight in cases so absurd as these. Well, I called her office and tried to get an answer as to why they didn't interview anybody and still called it thorough. And her chief spokesman, Cynthia Vaughn, gave an explanation that really runs along the line of Colonel Knorr. She said that these discharges and these diagnoses were a few months ago, and the Surgeon General didn't feel that the soldiers today would have any medically valid information to share about their cases.
Oh,
well, now, certainly if Specialist Town had been deaf before joining the Army, he might have remembered that.
Yeah.
If his fellow soldiers who had watched him earn a dozen medals for his performance felt he was too ill to serve from his first day on base, they might have had some commentary, but Ms. Pollack didn't think so, and so she terminated the review without interviewing anybody.
I have an interesting thought on that. I wonder how many people who go AWOL from the Army are later determined by the Army to have a personality disorder and therefore should just be let go. I wonder if they've ever done that.
You've struck on a key point. A lot of these soldiers, when they're dangling out there waiting to get Army medical treatment, but instead are trying to be passed out the door with a personality disorder, they can wait no longer, and they end up going AWOL. I was looking at a case of that just the other day. Once they do that, their options to force a medical board and force a diagnosis of post-traumatic stress disorder or traumatic brain injury are
right.
Simply gone.
Yeah, I could see.
And
that
they get chaptered out with a dishonorable discharge without benefits.
Now let's get Fred. He's east of the Rockies in Pennsylvania for Joshua Coors on Coast to Coast Live. Go ahead, hey Fred.
Hey Ian, I'll tell you what, this is the first time I ever give you a call, but when you started talking about the Vietnam veterans and so forth, I'm a Vietnam vet, and it took me years to get my disability benefits. I'm currently rated at 100% total disability through Agent Orange poisoning and a post-traumatic stress.
How long did it take you?
Over 10 years. I'll tell you what. It took me over 10 years to get my Social Security. I was in the Federal Aviation Administration, and I had a neurological problem that hit me, and they retired me disabled out of the FAA. It took me a year to get that back benefits.
Sure.
From there, I come back to Pennsylvania.
But the bottom line is here is that they did finally pony that up. It just took them 10 years to admit to
it. Oh, it finally ponied up. But here's the story about it. It's
gotta be
the adjudicators,
quick.
Ian.
Yeah.
The adjudicators are the ones that are non-combat, non-veterans. They're hires off the street that get, you know, special benefits to deny veterans benefits.
Yeah.
And
Fred,
what?
It's got to be frustrating, Fred. It's got to be way frustrating. I got to get a couple other people in here, but I so appreciate you and your amen on that. Let's get to David, who's listening on XM on Coast to Coast Live for Joshua Coors. Go ahead, David.
Yes, good evening.
This happened to you too?
No, I have a different perspective here. Joshua, I'm curious first. Happened to be in the middle of a thunderstorm, if you can hear that.
Yeah, I can, actually. Be careful.
Yeah, it's pretty bad here. I'm curious where you retrieve most of your data, how you get the information from certain soldiers.
How'd you do it, Joshua?
Well, this is through 8 months of interviews and digging through medical papers.
How about that, David? It's interviews and medical papers. What's wrong with that?
Okay, well, let me tell you where I come from here. I want to give folks at least one perspective. I spent 2 years from July of 03 to July of 05. I'm a military physician, and I don't want to identify where I was, but I spent 2 years taking care of deploying and redeploying soldiers who had medical issues, and that's all I did, myself, and I had several physician assistants.
Right.
I just want people to know that this was an Army post. I just want people to know that extremely dedicated folks.
Okay, well, as long as I got you here, let me ask you a question. That's fine, that's fine. But as long as I got you here and you have some experience, let me just ask you a question. How does a guy get his ears blown out by a mortar shell and not get automatically, right there, qualified for disability? He's become 100% deaf from a mortar shell. Why doesn't that automatically qualify him for disability? Instead of, and then after he went deaf, he developed a personality disorder, and then that's the excuse they used to broom him.
Well, Ian, I could tell you that I never saw that happen at my location. Now, first of all, you're dealing with a large bureaucracy.
Sure.
You're also dealing with multiple layers of process. I can tell folks that at the base level, when a soldier shows up, and asked to be seen by a physician because he has a problem, the folks at that level where I was, extremely dedicated. The process is
that's you mean, but nobody's calling your dedication into question.
Well,
I feel like you're crutching on the dedication part. I get the dedication. God bless you and thank you for serving your country. Honestly, though, that's the part that I don't get the jump between losing his hearing. That should qualify him right there.
Ian, you're right. But you have to understand how the process works. When a soldier has a problem like that, something called a line of duty has to be in place, and that is basically a statement that says that this was a problem that occurred while on active duty. And I never saw anybody with a bona fide line of duty get denied being medically boarded or dealt with.
All right, Joshua, let me respond. You want to say something here to Dr. David real quick?
Sure. I mean, no one is questioning the validity or character of his service, but this is an issue I saw all across the country, from Fort Carson to Fort Stewart in Georgia, Fort Polk in Louisiana. We saw cases of doctor after doctor who question the injuries of the soldiers coming back seeking benefits and instead slide them out the door with personality disorder. It is a large system, as he said, and there is a lot of room for a lot of bad apples. But at this point, it's so prevalent that Congress is stepping in to take a look at it. In the wake of my article's publication, nine senators, including Barack Obama, Barbara Boxer, Joseph Lieberman, are stepping in and calling for the GAO, the Government Accountability Office, to investigate this scandal. That investigation starts next week.
Kind of like that. Real quickly, I have time for one last call. I'm sorry, Nikki, who was it from Lexington? Lenny. Hey, Lenny, we got 1 minute for you for Joshua Coors, and then I want to play this tape from last night. You had a quick comment or a question?
Yes, I did, Ian, and you asked such great questions, and I know the mafia works in layers, too, but are these, if I stood in front of a recruiting office here in town, and I can't wait to read your article, Mr. Coors, but if I stood in front of a recruiting office and warned these young men that are coming in to serve their country voluntarily that this kind of thing could occur to them, what would be my chances of, like, being arrested?
Well, I can't say that, but I think the advice to all soldiers out there is that if you are wounded or know someone who is, make sure they demand a med board to be medically evaluated for disability and not go out the door with a personality disorder. You know, Ian, a side story here is that all people ask, why did these soldiers take the personality disorder discharge when they know they didn't have it? That's because, as all the soldiers have told me case after case, they were directly lied to by their doctors. Doctors saying to them, if you take the personality disorder discharge, you'll get disability pay, you'll get medical care, you'll get to keep your bonus. It's only in their final hours on base they find out none of those promises are true.
You can link up to the story through coasttocoastam.com. It's in The Nation. Joshua Kors, thank you for bringing it to our attention, and we'll be tracking that story when you get the congressional attention that it deserves.